Shalom and welcome to Rambam Yomi. This is Rabbi Mati Novik. Join me as we learn the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, one perek each day. Today we'll be learning Hilchot Chametz Umatzah Perek Hey. The last four prakim dealt extensively with the Isurim associated with Chametz and with a mitzvah asei to remove or destroy it. This perek discusses what constitutes Chametz, the necessary ingredients, what species of grain and what type of liquid, as well as the process of chimutz and the conditions under which it can and cannot occur. There are also external factors which can hasten chimutz or slow it down, as we will learn. The last part of the perek deals with kashering kelim, which had been used all year for chametz, to make them acceptable for Pesach use. This is a long perek, which combines some important halachic principles with a large amount of technical detail about avoiding chimutz in different scenarios. We will prioritize the fundamental principles and try to get to as much of the technical detail as possible. Halacha Aleph. Ein asur mishum chametz bepesach, ela chameshet minei hadagan bilvad, v'hein shnei minei hachitin, shein hachita v'akusemet, u'shloshet minei haseorin, shein haseora, v'shibolet shu'al v'hashifon. Aval hakitniot, kegon orez, v'dochan, u'folin, v'adashim, v'chayotzei behen, ein behen mishum chametz, ela afilu lash kemach orez, v'chayotzei bo, berotchin, v'chisahu bivgadim ad shnitpach, kmo batzeik sheichmitz, harei ze mutar b'achila, she'ein ze chimutz, ela sirchon. The only species of grain which can become chametz are the five species which we saw in Hilchot Brachot, regarding the brachot of hamotzi and birkat hamazon: wheat, spelt, barley, oats, and rye. The Rambam considers spelt to be a subspecies of wheat, and oats and rye to be subspecies of barley. This will be relevant in another area of halacha, but not here. However, all forms of kitniot, legumes, including rice, millet, beans, and lentils, cannot become chametz. Even if rice flour is kneaded in hot water and covered up until it rises in the same manner as regular dough, this is not chimutz, fermentation, but rather what the Rambam calls sirchon. The word sirchon literally means rotting, and is used by Chazal and the Rambam in this context to refer to a chemical process which resembles fermentation but with negative results. When dough ferments, enzymes in the yeast break down starch in the dough to produce alcohol and carbon dioxide gas. The gas remains trapped in the dough and causes it to rise. In flour made from kitniot, such as rice, the enzymes in the yeast often react with protein in the flour, rather than with starch, to produce foul-smelling materials which cause the dough to rot. We note that from a scientific standpoint, it is entirely possible for rice and other kitniot to ferment under the right conditions, and in fact the Mishnah records the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, that fermented rice is considered chametz for exactly this reason. Nonetheless, because of the much greater likelihood of sirchon in kitniot, the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is rejected by the Gemara, and halacha distinguishes completely between grain and kitniot. Even when dough made from a species of kitniot ferments properly, this isn't halachically chimutz, but rather sirchon. This is what the Rambam means at the end when he says that any fermentation of kitniot is considered sirchon. As is well known, Ashkenazim have the custom not to eat kitniot on Pesach. The first written record of this custom is from the time of the Rishonim, shortly after the lifetime of the Rambam, and different reasons are suggested for how it came about. One is based on what we just explained. Even though halachically, chimutz applies only to the five species of grain, the custom developed to apply it even to forms of kitniot which can practically undergo fermentation, that is, to be machmir for the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. A similar explanation makes the very practical point that since rice and other kitniot are used to make foods which resemble foods made from chametz, like porridge and even bread, one who eats kitniot foods may inadvertently come to eat similar-looking foods made from actual chametz. Another explanation is based on the agricultural practice of crop rotation, which was common in Ashkenaz countries in the Middle Ages. Because of this practice, the same field could be used to plant both grain and kitniot within a short period of time, and thus kernels of grain could easily get mixed with kernels of kitniot when these were put into bags and stored. Hence, any kitniot flour may have some grain flour mixed in which case the food made from it would be chametz. There is extensive discussion in the poskim about many aspects of this minhag. What species are considered kitniot, in what ways the prohibition of kitniot is less severe than that of chametz, and whether the minhag applies to derivatives of kitniot, like oils and extracts, in addition to the plants and flour themselves. We won't get into the details here, except to mention two respects in which the prohibition of kitniot is more lenient according to all opinions. One, even one who does not eat kitniot is allowed to own kitniot over Pesach, and thus need not sell them or otherwise get rid of his stock of kitniot. Two, whereas even a small amount of chametz can render an entire mixture forbidden, the Rama rules that regarding kitniot, we do not even require bitul b'shishim, 60 times more heter than iser, but rather we rely on bitul barov, a simple majority of heter. Halacha bet. Chameshet minei dagan elu, im lashan b'mei perot bilvad, below shei mayim ba'olam, einan ba'in lidei chimutz, Ela afilu hinichan kol hayom ad shnitpach habatzeik, harei ze mutar b'achila. She'ein mei perot machmitzin, ela masrichin. U'mei perot hen kegon yayin v'chalav u'dvash v'zayit u'mei tapuchim u'mei rimonim v'chol kayotze behen misha'ar yeinot u'shmanim u'mashkin. V'hu shelo yit'arev behen shem mayim ba'olam. V'im nit'arev behen mayim kolshehu, harei elu machmitzin. Even the five species of grain, which can become chametz, will not undergo chimutz if kneaded in pure fruit juice, including wine and oil, or even in other liquids like milk, honey, or, the Shulchan Aruch adds, eggs. This list is known collectively as mei perot, even though not all of them come from fruit. Any flour kneaded in mei perot is not considered chametz, and is entirely permitted to eat on Pesach. However, if even a small amount of water is added to some form of mei perot, this liquid can enable chimutz. The Shulchan Aruch adds, based on the opinion of other Rishonim, that mei perot mixed with water can even produce chametz more quickly than plain water, and thus one should not make dough for matzah using such a mixture. If he does, then the dough must be baked immediately, not even waiting the short amount of time, which we'll see in Halacha Yud Gimel, is typically acceptable when baking matzah. The Shulchan Aruch accepts the opinion of the Rambam that pure mei perot cannot be machmitz at all, and one may eat on Pesach foods made from dough kneaded with these liquids. But the Rama accepts the opinion of many other Rishonim, among them the Ravid in his Asagihir, that while mei perot cannot enable full chimutz, they are capable of generating a partial chimutz. This creates a product referred to in the Gemara as chametz nukshe, literally hardened or stiff chametz, which poskim conclude to be asur midrabanan. The Mishnah Berurah adds that aside from the opinion of these Rishonim, another reason to be machmir regarding the use of mei perot is the concern that a little water may have been mixed in, which according to all opinions makes the mei perot entirely capable of chimutz. Based on these factors, Ashkenazim have the custom not to eat what is usually called egg matzah, which is typically kneaded in mei perot, except in the case of someone who cannot eat regular matzah for medical reasons. Even some groups of Sfaradim have adopted this chumrah as well. We summarize some of the details of Halachot Gimel through Zion. On Pesach, one may not cook wheat in water in a manner which causes the kernels to crack open. This food is known as bulgur, or burgul in Hebrew. As once kernels have opened, there is a concern of chimutz. Similarly, one may not cook flour from one of the five types of grain in water to make a type of paddy. However, if the water is boiled first to a very high temperature before the flour is put into it, then this is permitted, as the flour does not have time to undergo chimutz before it is completely cooked. Nonetheless, the Rambam writes, the custom is not to rely on boiling the water first, as we can't be sure that the temperature is high enough to preclude chimutz after the flour is put in. The activities we just described are permitted when mei perot is used in place of water, because, as we've seen, mei perot cannot enable chimutz. When kernels of grain are roasted before being ground into flour, the roasting should, in principle, preclude the possibility of chimutz. However, due to a concern that the roasting was not complete, we don't cook this flour in water either. In Halacha Hay, the Rambam explicitly permits cooking using flour, which is really ground-up matzah. His phrase is matzah afuya shechazru v'tachnu ota. This is what we call matzah meal, or kemach matzah in Hebrew. We note that there is a custom, especially common among Hasidim and those of Hasidic descent, not to use matzah meal, or any form of matzah soaked in water, cooked or otherwise. These foods are known as gebrochts in Yiddish, and as shruya, meaning soaked in Hebrew. The reason for this stringency is a concern about the possibility of residual unbaked flour sitting on the matzah, or mixed into the matzah meal made by grinding matzah, which can then become chametz when soaked or cooked in water or some other liquid. The more prevalent custom, though, is to allow the use of matzah meal and soaked matzah without reservation. Halacha chet. Tavshil shnitbashel v'nimtzu'u bo se'orim ochitim, im nitbaku, harei kol ha-tavshil asur, sharei nit'arev bo ha-chametz, v'im lo nitbaku, motzi'in otan v'sorfin otan, v'ochlin sh'ar ha-tavshil, she'en ha-dagan shnivlal o nitbashel v'lo nitbaka chametz kamur shel Torah. V'eino ela midivrei sofrim, mishum shnemar u'shmartem ha-tamatzot, klomar, hizaru b'matza v'shimru otam mikol tzad chimutz. If a food is cooked with wheat or barley kernels inside, and these kernels are found after the cooking to have cracked open, then the entire mixture is forbidden, as the kernels may have become chametz, and even a small amount of chametz makes the entire mixture forbidden. If the kernels did not crack open, then they must be removed and burnt, but the rest of the mixture may be eaten. Why must these kernels be removed if they are not chametz? Because they came in contact with water, in a manner which could have enabled chimutz. This is a rabbinic extension of the Torah requirement of shmirah, being especially vigilant in guarding against chimutz, which is learned from the pasuk of Ushmartem ha-tamatzot. The Rambam elaborates on this in Halacha Tet. Lefichach amru chachamim, tzarich adam lizaher badagan she'ochel menu bepesach, kedei shelo yavo alav mayim achar shenikzar, ad shelo yeh bo shem chimutz. Dagan she'tava banahar, o shenafal alav mayim, keshem she'asur lo'ochlo, kach asur lekaimo, ela mochro l'Yisrael u'modi'o, kedei she'ochlenu kodem ha-pesach, v'imecharo la'goyim kodem ha-pesach, mocher ma'at lekol echad ve'echad, kedei she'yichle kodem ha-pesach, shema yachzor ha-goy v'imkerenu l'Yisrael. Based on this requirement of shmirah, one must be careful with any grain he eats on Pesach to ensure that no water comes in contact with it from the moment it is harvested. If some grain comes in contact with water, for instance, if the grain falls in a river or is left outside in the rain, then one may not even hold on to it. Rather, he must sell it before the start of Pesach. If he sells to a Jew, he must inform him that the grain fell in water so that he knows to eat it before Pesach. If he sells to non-Jews, he must sell only a small amount to each buyer so that he consume it before Pesach and not resell it to a Jew. Matzah made from grain which has been guarded in this extremely vigilant manner is known as matzah shmura, or as we typically say in English, shmura matzah. The Rambam in this halacha requires shmira for all grain consumed on Pesach, and the conclusion, therefore, is that for the Rambam, the only type of matzah which one may eat throughout all of Pesach is shmura matzah. The reason this is not the common practice is that most other Rishonim understand this requirement of shmira to apply not to all grain consumed over Pesach, but specifically to matzat mitzvah, that is, the matzah used to fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah at the Seder, which will be the topic of the next parak. There is an additional debate about the exact parameters of shmirah, specifically from what stage in the processing of grain this must begin. The Rambam, as we saw, requires shmirah from as early as the harvesting of the grain. Other Rishonim require this only from when the grain is ground into flour, so that grain kernels which came into contact with water may be used after drying. And other poskim feel that shmirah only means guarding against chimutz after the flour has been kneaded. According to the last opinion, one may even buy regular flour in the store and use it to make matzah. The Shulchan Aruch rules that matzah mitzvah used at the Seder should ideally be guarded from the time of harvesting, or at least from when it is ground into flour. And only when there is no alternative may one make store-bought flour into matzah mitzvah. The general custom nowadays is to treat store-bought flour as chametz, because in the industrial production of flour, there are points where it is moistened or otherwise comes into contact with water, causing a genuine concern of chimutz. The next 10 halachot or so include dinim relating to baking matzah and otherwise handling grain on Pesach, and we'll summarize many of the details. As long as one is actively kneading dough, even for an extended period of time, it will not become chametz. After the kneading ends, there are several possible signs which indicate that the dough has become chametz. If the dough makes a sound when it is smacked, familiar to bakers, which indicates the presence of carbon dioxide gas inside, then it is clearly chametz and must be burnt. Even if one has two batches of dough which he finished kneading at the same time, and only one of the two makes this sound when it is smacked, both batches must be burnt, as even the other is assumed to have reached chimutz. If the dough sits without being kneaded or baked for the time period of Kedei Hiluch Mil, then it is surely chametz and must be burnt. The Rambam writes elsewhere that the period of Kedei Hiluch Mil is 24 minutes, but the Shulchan Aruch accepts the more stringent and well-known opinion of 18 minutes. The Mishnah Berurah rules that lechatchila we follow the pesach of the Shulchan Aruch that matzah must be baked within 18 minutes of completing the kneading. But b'di'eved, we may rely on the Rambam in a situation of potentially great financial loss. Finally, if the dough turns pale, this too is a sign of chimutz, though not as sure a sign as the first two. Hence, one who eats this dough is not chayiv karet. There are several things one must avoid when making matzah in order to prevent chimutz. First, the dough kneaded at one time cannot be too large, as in a large batch of dough, there are inevitably parts which are not actively kneaded for an extended period of time, and these parts may become chametz. How large may the dough be? The Rambam allows up to the minimal size which is obligated in a frashat challah, which he explains is the volume of 43.2 kibbetzim. This is somewhere between 1.5 and 2.25 liters, depending on the different opinions about the size of a kibbetza. Second, as chimutz is facilitated by heat, one may not knead the dough outdoors under the open sky when it is sunny or even when it is cloudy. The water used for kneading may not be warm, including any water drawn from a well that same day. Rather, the water must be mayim shelanu, water which sat overnight in order to cool down. The Rambam is very stringent about the requirement of mayim shelanu, ruling that even b'di'eved, one may not eat matzah made from water which did not sit overnight. But the Shulchan Aruch quotes other opinions which are more lenient, and the Rama permits entirely the use of this kind of water. In another measure designed to avoid heat, one who is involved in kneading and baking matzah dough at the same time must dip his hand in cold water before each act of kneading to cool the hand down from the last time it was in the oven. Any water in which one dips his hand in the process of making matzah, either to wet the dough or to cool down his hand, must be poured out afterwards in a way that the water will not gather in one place, as this may cause residual pieces of dough in the water to undergo chimutz. One may not make matzah which has any type of decoration on it, as these take a long time to make, and the dough may become chametz during this time. A professional baker is allowed to make this type of matzah, as he moves quickly because of his expertise, and there is no concern of chimutz. Bran, that is, the outer layer of grains, such as wheat and oats, is considered very healthy today, but used to be used as chicken feed. This too can undergo chimutz, and so it may not be soaked and placed in front of the chickens, as it may become chametz if it sits out long enough. Rather, it must be fed to the chickens in such a manner that it is consumed immediately, or the one doing the feeding must take the remainder away before the time of kedei hiluch meal and dispose of it. Flour may not be put into charoset, as the sharpness of the charoset may cause chimutz immediately. Hence, if flour is added, the charoset must be burnt without delay. The situation is similar for mustard, except that mustard does not cause chimutz as quickly as charoset. Therefore, if one puts flour into mustard, he may eat it immediately rather than burning it. We continue with halacha chaf. Mutar latet ha-tavlin va-shum shemin va-ketzach va-chayotzei behen l'toch ha-batzek, v'chein mutar la-lush ha-isa b'mayim v'shemen o dvash v'chalav, o l'katef behen, uv'ayom ha-rishon asru la-lush u-l'katef ela b'mayim bilvad, lo mishum chametz, ela kedei shiye lechem oni, uv'arishon bilvad hu shetzarich liot zichron lechem oni. One may put spices in the matzah dough, and one may knead the dough with oil, honey, or milk as an alternative to water, as these are examples of mei perot, and we saw in Halacha Bet that mei perot cannot enable chimutz. We've already seen that Ashkenazim, following the Rama, are machmir in general not to eat this type of matzah. The Rambam adds that on the first day, Bayom HaRishon, one may not use mei perot, as the matzah must be lechem oni, bread of a pauper, and only matzah kneaded in water qualifies as lechem oni. The term lechem oni appears in the Torah in reference to matzah, and most poskim understand this requirement to apply strictly to the matzat mitzvah eaten at the Seder night. The Rambam seems to understand that it applies during the entire first day of the Chag, which is something of a chiddush, because there is no other din which applies only to the first full day of Pesach. Some Achronim, however, understand the phrase Bayom HaRishon in the Rambam here to refer not to the first day of the Chag, but to Erev Pesach, which is called Yom HaRishon in the Torah, as we saw in Perek Bet. In this understanding, the Rambam means that one should not make non-lechem oni matzah on Erev Pesach, lest he come to eat some of it at the Seder as matzah mitzvah. The remainder of the perek deals with kashering kelim used with chametz during the year for use on Pesach. We'll get to the laws of kashering kelim in general when we learn Hilchot Machalot Asurot, so we'll focus here on summarizing the principles and highlighting any dinim which are unique to kashering for Pesach. The general rule in kashering is kibol o kach polto. The manner in which a kli absorbs taste is the same manner in which the taste is discharged. Since a cooking pot or bowl comes in contact with hot liquid, it is kasher through hagala, that is, being immersed in boiling water. Before undergoing hagala, a kli must be thoroughly cleaned, as otherwise it will absorb taste from food residue sticking to it. An oven rack or other cooking implement which comes in direct contact with food at very high temperatures, without the medium of water, requires libun, being heated to a very intense level of heat. An oven can be koshered by running it on a self-cleaning cycle, which brings it to the heat required for libun. A microwave, which heats food without becoming hot itself, may be koshered, after being thoroughly cleaned, by heating up a glass of water for 10 minutes or so. The Rambam writes in Halacha Chaf Aleph that a kli typically used without heat at all, for example, a food container, may be used on Pesach without any koshering. Exceptions include a kli for storing yeast and a bowl used to knead chametz dough, as these have such a strong exposure to chametz that they can absorb chametz and transmit it to other foods even without the medium of heat. We'll come back to Halacha Chaf Bet, and for now we move to Halacha Chaf Gimel. Klei matachot uklei avanim shnishmesh behen chametz berotchin mechli rishon, kigon kiderot ve'ilfasin, noten otan letoch kli gadol, umamale alehen mayim, umartichan betocho, v'achar kach shotef otan umishtamesh behen b'matza. V'chein hasakinin, martiach et alahav ve'et hanitzav bechli rishon, v'achar kach mishtamesh behen b'matza. Any metal or stone kli rishon, that is, a kli in which chametz is cooked in boiling water, is koshered by immersing it in a bigger kli of boiling water. This is hagala, as we mentioned earlier. Two interesting points here. One, the Rambam adds that after hagala in boiling water, the koshering is completed by washing the kli in cold water. This doesn't seem to accomplish anything in terms of removing taste from the walls of the kli, so why is it necessary? The Magen Mishnah explains that this is a technical requirement based on the precedent of how a metal kli used for cooking a korban was koshered in the Mishkan. Like chametz, the taste of a korban absorbed in a kli eventually becomes prohibited to eat as notar, a korban whose time for eating has passed. The pasuk in Parshat Tzav says umorak vishutaf b'mayim. The kli must undergo hagala and then be washed. Even though this can be seen as a technical requirement limited to the world of korbanot, the Rambam applies it to general koshering, and this is indeed the common practice. Secondly, the Rambam says at the end of this halacha that a knife requires only hagala. Even though in Hilchot Machot Asurot, he requires libun for a knife, which was used by a non-Jew for non-kosher food. The Magen Mishnah explains that koshering for Pesach may be more lenient than general koshering of kelim purchased from a non-Jew, because chametz was absorbed in the kli while it was still an entirely permitted food. The phrase Chazal use is hetera bala, in contrast to a kli used by a non-Jew to cook non-kosher food where the taste was absorbed when it was already prohibited. Halacha Chaf Dalet. Klei matachot v'avanim uchlei eitzim shnishmesh behem chametz b'chli sheni, kigon karot v'chosot, noten otan letoch kli gadol, v'noten alehem mayim rotchin, u'manichan betocho ad shiflotu, v'achar kach shotfan u'mishtamesh behem b'matzah. Any metal, stone, or wood kli sheni, that is, a kli into which hot cooked chametz was poured, but no cooking was done in the kli itself, is koshered in a similar manner. They are put in an empty, larger kli, and boiling water is poured on them inside the larger kli. Again, the koshering is completed by washing the kli in cold water. Halacha Chafhei. Kol klei cheres shenishtamesh behem chametz b'chamin, bein kli rishon kigon kderot, bein kli sheni kigon karot, bein shayu meshuchin v'shu'in ba'avar she'osin otan kein zchuchit, bein shayu cheres kama shehen, ein mishtamshin behen b'matza, ela manichan l'achar ha'pesach u'mevashel behen. A kli cheres, that is, one made of pottery, which is used for chametz, may not be kashered for Pesach, be it a kli rishon or a kli sheni, as hagala does not remove taste from a kli cheres. Does libun work on a kli cheres? The idea of libun is that the intense heat is considered to essentially remake the kli from scratch, so this should work even for cheres. But in general, we are concerned that one will not heat the kli to a sufficiently strong level, as this may cause the kli to break, and therefore libun too is ineffective for a kli cheres. In Halacha Chaf Bet, there is an exception to this rule. A pottery surface used for baking pita directly above a flame may be koshered by libun. As this surface is typically subjected to intense heat as part of its normal use, the owner is not concerned that it will break due to the heat of libun, and therefore he will perform the libun at the proper heat. Halacha chafav, kli rishon shuratza lahartichho, v'lo matza kli acher gadol menu kedei lahartichho betocho, harei ze makiflo safa shel tit al svato mibachutz, umemaleehu mayim ad shiigberu hamayim al svato, umartiach hamayim betocho v'dayo, v'achar kach shotef oto umishtamesh bo b'matza. How does one kasher a kli which is too big to put inside another kli for hagala? He attaches a ring of hardened mud on the outside of the kli, just below the circumference of the opening, fills the kli with water, and brings the water to a boil. The water is then caused to overflow, and it collects in the ring of hardened mud on the outside. This keeps the water in sustained contact with the top part of the kli for several additional seconds, which counts as hagala. As in all other cases of hagala, the kli must then be washed before it can be used on Pesach. Thank you for joining me in learning today's parak of the Mishnah Torah. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas you'd like to share, I'd be happy to hear from you. Send me an email at mtorahyomi@gmail.com. That's M as in Mishnah, Torah, T-O-R-A-H, Yomi, Y-O-M-I, @gmail.com. Come back tomorrow as we continue with our next parak.